In this primer episode, we take a bit of a dive into our guest background, giving you a sneak peek into their origin story, as well as the challenges that they've faced and the things that drive them. If you enjoy what you hear, don't forget to listen to our main episode, which drops every Friday. And please do remember to like, subscribe, and rate us, as it really helps with our discoverability. Today, I am super excited to be speaking to Theo Priestley. Theo is a globally recognized and sought-after futurist, an international speaker, author, and authority on the future of business, technology, and society, focusing on the convergence of emerging trends, including Web3, spatial computing, and artificial intelligence. He is widely known and sought after for his forthright views on both the positive and the negative impacts of technology on society, and currently works to inform political and business leaders of the risks and benefits of adoption. Theo, really wonderful to have you on the podcast with me today. Thank you so much for joining me.
No, thank you for inviting me. I love these things.
Awesome. Although I have to say, I have been following your Twitter bant on whether or not people should be paying to have you on their podcast. I'm glad I managed to slip in before you changed the vibe. Let's get sort of cracking. For our audience, it'd be great for you to let us know, what was your first job?
Handing out flyers for a company, an electronics company called Lasky's. Which was almost like a Comet / Currys / Dixon's in the UK. And this is going back early 90s, perhaps, I think. So I just remember being handed a bunch of flyers and being paid £5 to stand outside the main street, Princes Street in Edinburgh, and hand these flyers out. That was my first paid job. I lasted a day because it was so boring. I handed the flyers back.
I've got to be honest, there's something in that, because I was last week speaking to someone, and their recommendation to me for biz dev was get a bunch of colored envelopes and just start sending out handwritten invitation cards. I think we may be heading back there. Maybe that's the future we're going to be talking about. But what did you do directly before you became a professional futurist?
So I've been in the technology industry for about 20 years, but before that, I actually worked in retail banking change programs as a program and a project manager. So I was knee deep in everything that people like to think that they know and talk about, whereas I was actually practicing and living the dread and the fear of doing it on a day-to-day basis, and really the reality of what all these technologies can do and don't do. During that time, I started just to write about all the trends that I was seeing and witnessing, and I would have the occasional sword fight with Gartner and Forrester about what they were talking about and the reality on the ground. And eventually that just kind of sort of blossomed into writing more and more about emerging technology trends and how it was impacting business.
So that was the kind of trigger, sort of the writing of blogs and so on. But was there something specific? Did something kind of snap in your brain and say, well, actually, like, I could be a futurist. This is a career path? Because it doesn't sound like, you know, a typical typical choice for someone sitting up in Edinburgh, I guess, right?
Yeah, you don't find that many on the street. No, actually, it was basically people coming up to me during talks at conferences and things and saying, oh, you're like a futurist kind of thing. You talk about the future and where it's all going and blah, blah, blah. And I kind of like went along with the flow and adopted it as a inverted commas title. I didn't really, you know, there are many futurists out there. They all have different paths. Some actually go the academic route and actually get a kind of future studies qualification. But I don't see that there is actually a need for that, especially if you can practice it and apply it in practice, that kind of sort of futurist mindset. And I think a lot of people also think being a futurist is just predicting something, you know, throwing out the old glib comment about, oh, in the next 10 years or by 2050, we're all going to be wearing chips on our head and have
latter-day Nostradamuses, right?
Yeah, but it's not. It's more about preparing people and helping them navigate that change and where it's potentially going to go. And I think that's the skill and certainly the real skill behind futurism and futurology.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about that, I think, in the main segment. But what would you be doing if you weren't a futurist?
Oh, I'd be talking about technology somehow, or I'd be writing about it as in a sci-fi novel or something. I've got a hundred different sort of science fiction ideas that I'd love to sort of tackle, and I just never have the time to write them. So if I wasn't being a futurist, I would still be talking about it in some shape or fashion, and maybe that just turns into a writing career instead.
Yeah, no, completely get it. So let's talk about being a futurist. So for the benefit of our audience, what does it entail? Who benefits from the work that you do? And are there any specific industries that you focus on?
Yeah, so like I say, my core skill is actually to look at where we are, study historical past trends, and then help companies and people, in general, navigate to what are the potential possible paths that our futures can lead, and what are those decisions that lead us on those particular directions. As we've seen, a lot of what we are experiencing right now are decisions made by large technology companies to say, these are the futures that we should be heading towards. And myself and my co-author of the book that we wrote a couple of years back was the final chapter was more about you still have the power and the agency to make those decisions and influence the future that you want to see. And I think for me, being a futurist is helping people, it's helping people sort of see the unraveling of paths and of choice ahead of them, and then giving them the kind of sort of the scenarios of, well, these are the most likely, these are the typical, but maybe not, these are the highly unlikely, but they could have been extremely impactful. And just giving people that choice in terms of, which ones do you want to take, what are the decisions to you need to get there. And that can be on a personal level, or that can be governmental, or that could be business.
Yeah, I guess it's opening the eyes, opening people's eyes to what future potentials there might be, and then giving them, I guess, as you say, the agency to choose between them. For our listeners, the book you're talking about is The Future Starts Now, which you co-authored with Bronwyn Williams, amongst others. And we've had Bronwyn on the podcast in the past. In fact, she was one of our very early guests, and we talked at that time about the changing social contract, and the move from kind of this asset ownership model to asset leasing and all this sort of stuff. If you were to think about three technological shifts you think we're currently experiencing or about to experience over the next decade, what would those be?
Well, I think the first one is obviously artificial intelligence. I mean, I do believe that we will see some form of AGI, artificial general intelligence, emerge within the next 10 years. And of course, that will have a huge societal impact, because at the moment, it's all very kind of novelty phase. If you think of a civilization that suddenly has something that is on par with them, and potentially more superior to them, then that's going to break society, or certainly break the minds of society and capitalism in general. And we're just not prepared for that. So that's one. I think the other one is obviously merging people with machines. So BCI, brain computer interfaces, is quite an interesting one. And I would say probably, going in hand with these, because we talk about convergence later, is general purpose robotics. So merging AI with these machines that can actually do a lot of sort of general tasks that we do. And I think space is going to be another one as well. So again, you have that confluence of AI plus robotics plus space, which actually will allow us to not only push further out from the Earth itself, but also take those technologies and those advances that we need to build for space back down here. Because a lot of what NASA built from the 60s, 70s, that we saw for the space station and everything else, and those launches and astronauts, have actually filtered down back on Earth in terms of healthcare, MRI machines, etc. So we don't actually fully appreciate just how things circle and come round again.
Yeah, so they may have been developed in one sector and moved into the other. In fact, it's really interesting that you mentioned sort of general purpose robotics, and I think we can get into this in the main podcast, because I think at the moment most people are sort of concerned about what one might consider desk jobs, the sort of knowledge economy as being the most disrupted by what's been happening in the AI kind of world. But when you then think about, and therefore the jobs that are most protected as a result are physical, labor, essentially, right? So whether that's stacking shelves at your local supermarket, whether that's, pulling product off the shelves at Amazon, or whether that's being a plumber, for argument's sake, right? But if you get to a point where you have AGI plus robots, and you know, the ability for those robots to maneuver themselves in near human-like ways, then I guess, you know, then you're talking about disruption at a completely different level. Well, as I say, we're going to get into a lot of this in the main podcast. For the time being, Theo, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.